But the Medrash says as follows on the beginning of the parsha. Let me read the pasuk first of all. It says, "V'ha'ya ekev tishmuun esam mishpatim e'ela u'shamartim v'asisim u'sam." That it shall be that if you, and that's translated in the article, translates this, this shall be the reward when you will hearken to these ordinances. This shall be the reward when you will hearken to these ordinances. It's problematic because the word ekev doesn't really mean reward. It doesn't mean reward. It means actually a heel, a heel, the heel of a foot. So the commentaries are grappling with how to fit it into the sense of the pasuk. So some interpret it as a reference to the reward of mitzvahs. The reward for listening to the mitzvahs will be that Hashem will safeguard you, safeguard for you the covenant and the kindness that he swore to your forefathers. Right? So how does the word ekev fit in? So Rashi brings a Medrash Tanchuma and says, this is very well known, if the lighter mitzvahs, at least the perceived lighter mitzvahs, because there are really no lighter mitzvahs, we can't make an assessment ourselves about which mitzvahs are more important, which mitzvahs are less important. All mitzvahs are important. But if the mitzvahs which are light in your own eyes, that a person typically tramples on with the heels of his feet, if he does those, then certainly you'll get reward. And as the point is, the emphasis of the pasuk is: don't neglect any of the mitzvahs. Don't go ahead and say some mitzvahs are more important, some mitzvahs are less important, and only focus on the more important mitzvahs. V'hoya ekev, and it shall be that the ekev types of mitzvahs, if you listen to even the lesser important types of mitzvahs in your eyes, you listen to those, you follow them, then Hashem indeed will protect you and preserve His covenant with you. That's the pasuk. So the Medrash over here starts off with the following word. I'm going to read through the Medrash and explain it. Medrash says, halacha, there's a halacha. And we're going to take a journey into Hilchos Shabbos for a few minutes, the laws of Shabbos. It says, halacha, there's a halacha. Adam Yisrael, sheyesh le menorah. If a person has a menorah, a candelabra, shesuya prokim prokim, which is made in pieces, it's a dismantable menorah, a dismantable candelabra. Mahu letaltel b'Shabbos. Are you allowed to move it around on Shabbos? Can you move it around on Shabbos or not? In other words, you have this candelabra, which is made up of individual pieces. It's assembled as it is right now. It is assembled. So it's standing there. Right? Let's say there's no flame on it, because then there's a problem with the flame. Let's say it's an ornament. It's a pretty candelabra. Are you allowed to move it around on Shabbos? Can you move it even though it's whole, it's one entity? And the answer is no, the Medrash says, because based upon a Gemara, Hamarkiv Kani Menorah B'Shabbos, because somebody who assembles the pieces of the menorah on Shabbos would be Chayv Achatz, would be liable to a sin offering. And there was, the point is it's a big discussion, right? There's a concept of binyan bekelim, of construction, even with vessels. We typically think about construction, about building a building. But also there's opinions that say that there's also construction with vessels also. So anytime you put together a utensil, you piece together the different parts of a utensil, you make it into one entity, that's called binyan. That's called the malacha, the malacha of constructing on Shabbos, right? So being that's the case, then if you have this dismantled menorah and it falls apart, it falls into pieces, and then you put it back together again and you reassemble it, you'd be in violation of the malacha of construction on Shabbos. So therefore, for this reason, the rabbis made a decree to make this thing muktzah. Muktzah is all of the items which are off limits from moving around on Shabbos. That's the category. It's a rabbinic law about various different types of items which are forbidden rabbinically to move around, not to touch. You can touch these things, but you just can't move them around. So you can't move a pen. You can't move a phone. You can't move any items which are associated with a malacha. You can't move around on Shabbos. It's the whole category of law called muktzah. And this is an example of that. So here you have a menorah which is completely together. It's intact. It's a whole menorah together. But for fear of it falling down and breaking apart, and then the person reassembling the parts of the menorah, the rabbis forbade it. They said it's muktzah. And this is in the Shulchan Aruch also. It says, menorah bein gedola bein katana, a menorah whether it's large or small, im he shall prokim, if it's made up of parts, a metalton losa, you can't move it around. The chayshina, because we're concerned, shema lest, tipol, it falls over, the tisparek, and it breaks, v'yachzerena, and he puts it back together again, v'nimtza osa kli, and it emerges that he is in violation of making a vessel on Shabbos. And that's what the Medrash starts off with. That's the Medrash, that's what it's saying over here. It's asking the question, are you allowed to move such a menorah? Even though it's intact, it's together, you can't move it for fear that it falls, breaks apart, you put it back together and be in violation of the malacha of bona, construction. That's number one in the Medrash. Then the Medrash continues. It says, Amr Yosi b'Reb Chanina. He said, Amosai Shamri Yisrael as a Shabbos, K'shem Sharoilo. When did the Jewish people observe Shabbos properly? When did the Jewish people observe Shabbos properly? The implication of the question is that there was only one time in history that the Jewish people collectively, as a nation, observed Shabbos. The Medrash says, Techila b'shenit k'shenitna lehem ba'olish. Initially, when the mitzvah Shabbos was first given to the Jewish people in a place called Olish. This is one opinion. I think others say it was in Mara was the place where Shabbos was given. But either way, here the Medrash says Olish, a place called Olish, and this is before they came to Mount Sinai. So it's actually it's a chiddush. It's an interesting idea. There are certain mitzvahs which were given to the Jewish people even before they came to Mount Sinai. I mean, we know that also Mitzrayim, Korban Pesach, the different, even Tefillin was given in Mitzrayim also. There are certain mitzvahs which were given before the Torah was given at Sinai. And Shabbos is one of them. So Shabbos was actually commanded to the Jewish people in this location called Olish in their journey from Mitzrayim to Har Sinai. And the Medrash says that this was the only time that the Jewish people actually kept Shabbos properly, collectively. I mean, not to say that obviously many, many people, millions of Jews have kept Shabbos properly, but collectively as an entire nation, without a single occurrence of violation of Shabbos, this was the only time, which is a pretty astounding idea. And then the Medrash brings a verse. It says, V'yishbu Shu'am, B'yom HaShvi, etc. Then the Medrash continues and says, Hey, V'yat Sovo, and you think, Shemel HaRosach HaNasati L'chaz HaShabbos, I gave you Shabbos for your negative, for your bad. You know, with all of this, with the fact that only one time in history, the entire Jewish people have kept Shabbos. I mean, what kind of gift is Shabbos? Like, it's like an impossibility. And it says also that if the Jewish people would keep Shabbos for 2 weeks straight, the redemption would come. I mean, what chance do we have? What chance? I mean, the Shabbos is not doing us any good. It's only for our detriment. And also, the some commentaries over here say also for our detriment, because look at the details of Shabbos with the laws of Muktzah. And moving around a menorah, it's so detailed, it's so intrusive, it's so difficult. Shema.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
All right.
That's
my... The Atzava Shema...
Reminder of Shabbat tonight, right?
No, it's telling me that my sugar is low.
Okay. The Atzava Shema L'Rosach and the Satiluchas of Shabbos. You may think that, you know, Shabbos is being given for your detriment. It's so difficult. They only kept Shabbos once. It's so difficult to keep the halachas, says the Medrash, or says Hashem back in response. Not true. Lo nasati l'cha ela l'tuvasocha. I gave you Shabbos only for your benefit. Shabbos is nothing but delicious. Shabbos is only for your benefit. It has no harm whatsoever. Kate said, how so? Amr b'chiyah b'Rabbi Abba. At Mekadosh is a Shabbos of Meichla Mishta of Chesus Nekia. You sanctify Shabbos with good food, with drinks, with clothing, with nice clothing, and Mahanes Nafshecha, and you beautify yourself. You enjoy it. Shabbos, you know, obviously we know there are two parts to Shabbos. There's the Melachos of Shabbos. There's also the Onik Shabbos, the delight of Shabbos, the sanctification of Shabbos, and the beauty of Shabbos. So Hashem says, listen, you're sanctifying Shabbos with good food, a good meal, with drinks, with clothing, etc. Mahanes nafshecha, you're delighting your soul on Shabbos. And inosin l'choscha, I'll give you reward. I'll reward you amply for that. As it says in Yeshaya, karos l'Shabbos onek, you call Shabbos a delight. You create the atmosphere of Shabbos, make an onek Shabbos, make it beautiful. Make it beautiful. What's written after that? Oz tizanag al Hashem, then you will delight in Hashem. You'll delight in Hashem. Don't worry, keep Shabbos and you'll have a relationship with me. Keep Shabbos and you'll have a relationship. It's only going to be good. Don't worry about it. You know, it may be different. There may be difficult aspects of Shabbos. It's true that collectively the Jewish people only kept Shabbos once, but that's only as an entire nation. How about you? How about me? How about the individuals? We can all have. We all have access to Shabbos, and Hashem says, tremendous, beautiful reward is coming your way by keeping Shabbos. Amar lo Yisrael, the Medrash continues. The Jewish people then say to Hashem, fine, but Amosai at Nosin Lonus Schar Mitzvah Shana Osim. But when are we going to get this reward? You're telling us about this tremendous reward. When do we get it? When is this reward coming to us? So Hashem says back, Mitzvah Sha'atim Osim Piroseyim Atim Ochlim Achshav, mitzvahs which you do today in this world, the fruits of those mitzvahs you'll have benefit of in this world. So Shabbos included. But all mitzvahs in general, you get the benefit, you get some dividends of the mitzvahs in this world. But rest assured, Sahara Be'ekev, the main reward, the real reward, the primary reward is at the Ekev. I'm going to be giving it to you. Ekev means the end. I'll be giving you the main reward. When is that? In the world to come. The world to come, that's when the main reward is coming. So you're concerned about when the reward is going to come. You'll get some kind of dividends in this world, but the primary reward is reserved for you in the world to come. Sahara, the reward is Be'ekev. Ekev, name of the parasha, right? Ekev, because the word Ekev means heel, the end, at the very end. And that's the connection the Medrash is making to the Pasuk, or to the parasha, because the main reward is going to be Ekev, at the end I'll be giving to you. Menayin, how do we know? Because it says in the Pasuk over here, V'ahoyah Ekev Tishma'un. At the Ekev, at the end of life, after 120, in Olam Haba, in the next world, you'll get reward then if you'll listen to the mitzvahs. The reward is coming. Don't worry. The reward is coming. Don't just be patient. Be patient. And you're thinking like, be patient. Okay, like, you know, it's one thing if a person is 119 already, but a person is 20 years old, 30 years old. You know, anywhere farther away from that. Be patient. Okay, but that's what the Medrash is saying. For Ekev Tishma, at the end. The reward will be coming. That's how you read the pasuk. So you have to read the verse as at the end shall be the reward. V'ahoyah Ekev, at the end shall be the reward when you hearken to these ordinances. Right? So that's the Medrash. That's the Medrash. So a lot of different parts of the Medrash, but the Chasam Sofer, famous commentator, he has a couple of problems, a couple of questions with this Medrash. The first question is that if the Medrash is using the example of the, so to speak, the minutiae of the halacha vis-a-vis the menorah, not moving a menorah around, as an illustration of how difficult perhaps Shabbos could be perceived to be. I mean, there's a million halachas on Shabbos. There's so many halachas. Why specifically the halacha of not moving a menorah? Why would that be cited as an example which should get people scared? Right? Why that prohibition of Shabbos more than any other prohibition of Shabbos? That's number one. And a more fundamental, more philosophical, and even legal question the Chasam Sofer asks. A legal question, a philosophical legal question. What is Hashem saying to us? He's saying to us that don't worry, the reward is coming. You know, don't worry, you're concerned when the reward is going to be. The reward is going to be in the next one, Olam Haba. Doesn't that violate what Hashem says himself? What does it say about a worker? If you hire somebody, right, what's the halacha? You have to pay them right away. You have to pay by the next day.
Yeah.
So what type of ethic is this that Hashem is telling us to get to work, do the job of the mitzvahs, serve Hashem, do all these mitzvahs? Don't worry, I'm going to pay you eventually. Eventually, you're going to get the reward. I mean, you lose hope. You feel like you're being gypped. I'm working so hard. I'm working so hard, and the payment is not going to come until the next world. It seems to be like a contradiction to that idea, baltolin, not to delay, not to leave over the wages of a person until a few days later, you have to pay on time. So these are the questions that Chasam Sofer asks. So he says, it's a very beautiful idea. He says, the answer to that question about the wages, you know, it all depends upon what kind of job it is. Hmm. Right? Because let's say if the job is over today, so that's when the halacha applies, you have to pay the person right away. But let's say he's a builder, he's a contractor, he's building. I mean, even though there may be a deal beforehand, he gets a deposit before he starts the job. But you know, you don't get paid fully until the job is over. So if it's going to take 3 months to build a house, it's only at that point you expect to get the payment at the end. So Baltolin, this prohibition of not of delaying the wages, is applicable to when the job is done. When the job is done, that's when you have to pay. But if the job is not over yet, I can't be expecting to get paid unless we've made a contract as such. But ordinarily, you can't expect to get paid until the job is done. The point is, and this is the punchline over here, you know, when is the job done? You see, it's a very subtle idea. How do we look at mitzvahs? How do we look at the mitzvahs we do? Do we look at the mitzvahs we do as separate individual acts and things that we do which are beneficial to other people, to ourselves in the here and now? You know, every mitzvah you do, you get a satisfaction and you benefit someone, you give tzedakah, you help the person. I put on tefillin, I feel a sense of connection. I keep Shabbos, I feel delighted with Shabbos. All of these things, do we look at mitzvahs purely as that? Mm-hmm. As individual pieces which provide benefit and experience of dveikus in right now or whatever other benefits there are? Or are mitzvahs a process of building ourselves? We are developing ourselves. And this is the proper attitude of what mitzvahs are about. Mitzvahs are building blocks to develop ourselves into a holistic entity of kedusha, of sanctity. So we are building ourselves. So aside from, as the Medrash says, there are certain benefits and dividends of a mitzvah in the here and now, in this world right now. But the primary reward of the mitzvah, or the primary outcome of the mitzvah, is the all-inclusive, holistic development and creation of ourselves, the creation of ourselves. And we can't see it. It's something which we have to put effort into to understand that there's a whole interior universe inside of ourselves, inside the physical body. It's the universe of the neshama. And this neshama is being developed and expanded and grown. And that job of doing mitzvahs is not over until we breathe our last breath of life. Only at that point is the job over. Only at that point have we fully developed ourselves and created the edifice, the spiritual edifice within ourselves. And therefore, it's only then that the reward comes. It's only then that the natural reward appears to us when we've created that self-entity of the kedusha that we are within ourselves. And only at the end can we expect to get the reward. That's the concept. So that every mitzvah, there are benefits to mitzvahs along the way, but the primary result of the mitzvahs is not until we've created ourselves, until the journey is completely over. So the Chassam Sofer says that's the reason for the analogy of the menorah, because halachically, if you take an entity, an object, and you piece it together, like for example, let's say a salt shaker, you know, is a salt shaker. Let's say the top of the salt shakers are for a sippy cup for children, right? And you take the top off and you put the top back on the cup. You tighten it up. Is that considered the malacha of construction? The answer is no, because the cup is an entity unto itself. The cup is an entity unto itself. The point of the analogy of the menorah, because that's an example of where the individual parts of the menorah don't serve any individual function. They don't serve an independent, autonomous function. That's the principle of binyan, of bona, of construction with vessels. If the individual parts of the whole vessel don't have any intrinsic or autonomous identity, and now you bring them together and now create an identity to it, that's the malach of construction. This is also, by the way, according to the Chazon Ish, the reason why electricity is forbidden on Shabbos. The reason why you're not allowed to use electricity is for the same reason, because, for example, let's imagine an electric fan sitting on the table, right? What does it do? All it is just a paperweight. It has no function. There's no functionality to the fan whatsoever. You plug it in, electricity flows through it. All of a sudden, it turns into something. So that's called construction. You're now giving form to a inanimate, to a non-functional item. Giving form and identity to a non-functional item is considered binyan b'kelim, is considered construction with vessels, according to that's the Chazon Ish's opinion. But the example of the menorah is precisely the example, it's the perfect metaphor for what mitzvahs are about. Because the individual parts of the menorah, the branches, the legs, whatever the different parts are, they symbolize every mitzvah. Only when all the mitzvahs come together and homogenize and galvanize into the whole person, now the whole person is created. Only when all the different parts of the menorah are all galvanized together to make the menorah, now it's a menorah. And that's the illustration. That's the illustration of the menorah. It teaches us that our life is a journey of building and building and building mitzvahs. And as much as every mitzvah which we do along the way is incredible and has tremendous power, but the true power of every single mitzvah is in the combination with all the mitzvahs and the galvanizing together with all of the mitzvahs to create the Kedusha, the beacon of light of Kedusha, the menorah, my menorah of light, which is only going to fully shine after 120 in the next world. That's when the full identity of the person is created by the merging together and the combining together of all the mitzvahs together. And that's the idea, that's the message over here. Now, with the word Akev, right, the word Akev also, as I said at the beginning, Medrash says, it's also alludes to how even small mitzvahs people trample over with their heels. And this is also part of the same idea, that every mitzvah, it's not in our power or of jurisdiction to decide which mitzvahs are more important, which mitzvahs are less important. Every single mitzvah is essential for building the entire whole of the individual. And obviously this, you know, it's predicated on the idea that we understand, you know, it always goes back to the same principle, eternity of the neshama, eternity of the neshama. So while the outer shell of the physical body, you know, flakes away and dissolves away, you, I, the neshama remains forever and forever and ever. And that neshama, the picture, the energy, the spirit of that neshama is going to be based upon the building up of more and more mitzvahs to create the whole entity that I am. And that's what is that. That's the message over here. Now, this also is said, it's also the same idea is said by the Orach Chaim. Orach Chaim, another famous commentator on the Chumash, on a pasuk later on in the parasha, which is a few verses later. You go to chapter 8, verse 1 of the on page 982 in the art scroll, it says there, it says, Kol ha-mitzvah she'anochi matzavacha yom tishmarun. Now, it's translated over here, the entire commandment, even that is, even in English, it's a bit awkward. It says, all the mitzvah that I'm commanding you today, you shall observe to perform. Obviously, what it's referring to, all the mitzvahs, keep all mitzvahs, right? Keep mitzvahs. All the commandments that I'm commanding you today to observe, so that you may live and increase and come to possess the land. Now, it stands out like a sore thumb. Kol ha-mitzvah, all the mitzvah. It doesn't read well. It should say all the mitzvahs, plural. So the Orach Chaim talks about this. I want to read this I'm going to read it from the English, the translation of it, because it's so powerful. He says, in truth, the great man Moshe warned in this verse against something that he perceived in the hearts of people, that there is a spirit that misleads them, many of them, small and great alike. Many people fall into the trap of this corrupt mindset, which is like a ladder upon which they descend step by step to continually decrease their service of Hashem and ultimately to leave the path of life completely. This occurs when people perform a few of Hashem's mitzvahs that happen to come their way, and all the more so if they strongly attach themselves to one of Hashem's mitzvahs consistently and diligently. This often gives rise to a negative attitude where, because of their satisfaction with the mitzvahs they've already done, or that they're doing, they become to be lax in their fulfillment of the other mitzvahs that present themselves. Mm. You become invested in certain mitzvahs that you like, you have an attraction to, you enjoy doing, or are easier to do. So they become, that's my mitzvah. You know, this is my mitzvah. This is what I'm committed to. This is even more likely to occur if they've already fulfilled many mitzvahs, that they feel satiated by that portion of the mitzvahs they've already done, giving them the feeling that they can disregard the others. It's a very, very challenging, you know, it's a challenging situation. We become like, this is our expression of our Judaism. This is our way that we are fulfilling mitzvahs in Judaism. Now, I've thought about all the questions which you're asking, so I'm going to address them all. So you don't even need to write it down. He continues, how greatly did this affliction spread among our people, and particularly in the hearts of those who follow the Torah of Hashem, i.e. those who are more engaged in Torah study and mitzvah performance than the general population. For they disparage the minor mitzvahs, seeing themselves as too important to worry about these mitzvahs, since they learn Torah and fulfill most of the mitzvahs, etc. They're so impressed with their own religiosity that they disregard mitzvahs that are of lesser significance. Mm. To address this failing, Moshe Hashem's prophet Moshe came with this his reproof over here, the entire commandment in the singular. The entire commandment that I command you in the singular. Moshe was not referring with this term to one specific mitzvah, but rather he referred to the entire Torah as if it were one mitzvah and commanded that it must be observed in its entirety. In other words, it's the same idea as before. You have to look at it's one whole entity. It's one whole homogeneous entity to create ourselves. And in this way, Moshe taught that one should not stray with the above-mentioned error, adhering to some mitzvahs and disregarding others. For in essence, there is no difference between one mitzvah and the next. A person must therefore observe all of them equally. Continues. Mm-hmm. Moshe then provides an irrefutable reason for the necessity to keep all the mitzvahs, because the verse continues on to say, so that you may live and increase and come and possess the land. With this statement, you may live, Moshe intended to convey that the sages said in the Zohar, which says that that a person has 248 limbs and 365 sinews in his body. And correspondingly, Hashem commanded the Jewish people to observe 365 mitzvah prohibitions and 248 mitzvah obligations, meaning to say that every mitzvah, positive mitzvah, maps to a particular organ of the body, limb, organ of the body, and every negative commandment maps to a particular sinew, ligament of the body. So that such that the mitzvahs themselves are essentially enlivening and spiritualizing every single aspect of the body. With this correlation in mind, a person need only imagine if any ache or pain were to come upon one limb or sinew of his, and he would cry out in misery from his pain, and he says to his friend, I'm in pain. Would he accept the response to his cry with someone to tell him, what are you worried about? You've got 248 limbs. And so one of them is in excruciating pain. 247 are fine. What's the problem? I mean, what kind of reaction would you have to that? If only one out of your 48 limbs is diseased, if only one out of your 248 limbs is diseased, that is not a reason. That's not a reason to complain, the person says. Obviously, the person would not be moved by that whatsoever. The very same idea applies to the observance of the mitzvahs, each of which corresponds to one of the limbs or sinews. When a person transgresses or disregards one of the mitzvahs, he brings pain upon the corresponding spiritual limb or sinew. And just as when a person is physically ill, a response about the health of the other 247 limbs does not help to remove the feeling of pain in the remaining limb of the 248. So too, if a person disregards one of the 248 mitzvah obligations, his fulfillment of the other 247 mitzvah obligations does not compensate for the absence of the one remaining mitzvah of the 248. Mm. And similarly, the same applies to the negative commandments as well. So this is the idea. This is the same idea. It's one whole entity. It's one homogeneous, holistic system, where every mitzvah counts to form the whole holistic identity of self, which is only going to be fully realized and completed after 120. The problem is, Simon is thinking, and others as well, right? What hope do we have, right? What hope do we have? And first of all, there's even just the idea which he says, just on a very, very technical level, it's impossible to keep 248 mitzvahs and 365 because not all mitzvahs apply to everybody. Some mitzvahs apply to men, some to women, some to Kohanim, some to Levim, some to judges. I mean, everyone has got the Jewish people are divided into different kind of groupings. So how do you even have everyone being mekayim all the mitzvahs? So if it's true that every single mitzvah maps to a particular part of the body, so if let's, for example, this mitzvah maps to over here, this arm over here, but this is the mitzvah of a Kohen. Well, I'm not a Kohen, so therefore this limb is now crippled? Is this spiritually crippled now? Well, it seems like a very, very unfair system, and Hashem is disadvantaging us from the very outset. So the answer to this question is a very, you know, it's well discussed. There are two basic answers to the question, really three, but two well-known answers. Number one is that one concept is that when we learn about a mitzvah, even if a mitzvah doesn't apply to us, learning about the mitzvah, we get the light of that mitzvah. So let's say you have a mitzvah which is not applicable to you. You're not able to do it. By learning about the mitzvah, you get the schar, you get the reward, you get the light of that mitzvah as though you actually did the mitzvah. And they say this about karbonah sacrifices. This is why you're supposed to learn about sacrifices, even though we don't have a mate, Pesach Mikdash today. Because the studying of the sacrifices brings the light of the mitzvah itself, like we actually did it. So learning about, so that's why there's no such thing as, well, you know, learning a mesechta which is not, so to speak, relevant to you. There are many mesechtas of Gemara, and many of the halachas may never be applicable in your personal life. But by learning about it, you get you're participating in that particular mitzvah. You get the schar, the reward, the light of that mitzvah. So that's one method. You have access to to a mitzvah that way. And another technique, which we speak about, is that when you become part of a community, when you're part of a community, and those people who do these mitzvahs, you get the schar of that. The mitzvahs that you're doing, they get the schar of that. If you make yourself part of a community, we all together do those mitzvahs together. We do those mitzvahs together. And this is also, the Meshech Chochmah mentions this also. It's very interesting. In the narrative of the revelation at Sinai, it says, famous words, all together now, Nasa V'Nishma is where? It's, where is it in the Chumash? 24-7, right? 24/7. Not, I mean, we did this over here, remember this years ago. 24-7 is where it says, Exodus 24-7, where it says, Nasa V'Nishma, we will do and we'll listen. Right? The famous words, we'll do and we'll listen. However, it's in the parasha of Mishpatim, right? So the actual revelation, the narrative of the revelation is in parashas Yisro. Parts of the revelation is repeated again, or part of the narrative is repeated in Parsha Mishpatim later on. It's in that second repeat that the words Nasa V'Nishma is mentioned. In the first narrative, in Parsha Yisro, it says there the Jewish people said, Nasa, we'll just do. So when you're reading it the first time, it's people make a mistake. They're expecting, when they see the word Nasa in Parsha Yisro, they expect the Torah to then say V'Nishma. That's not where it says it. It only says Nasa V'Nishma in Mishpatim, in the repeat of the narrative. But the Meshech Chochmah says the difference between the two expressions. Nasa is speaking to one way of doing mitzvahs, of having access to all the mitzvahs. We will do all the mitzvahs. The Jewish believers, we're prepared and ready to do all the mitzvahs. Even those mitzvahs which may not be applicable to us, we'll do them via those people who it is applicable to. Right? So Nasa means we will do. So it's a collective call, a collective declaration. We are all going to do the mitzvahs as a whole, as a community together. You do this mitzvah, I'll do that mitzvah. And together as a collective, we'll be able to do all the mitzvahs. Nasa V'Nishma, we will do and we will listen, is the second time that even, and as a second way of doing those mitzvahs, is also by nishma, by hearing, learning about the mitzvahs, by learning about the mitzvahs as well. That's another access point to be able to fulfill all the mitzvahs. So again, by connecting ourselves with those people who are doing all the mitzvahs, we all collectively as a group, we do the mitzvahs together. Alternatively, by learning about them. Now, this sounds great. But how does this work with the previous idea? Because you can imagine how much a person now can now, you know, say, okay, fine. So I'll just, you know, Rabbi, can you do this mitzvah for me? I'm going to the beach for the weekend. You know, can you observe Shabbos for me this weekend? You know, it's obviously an intelligent person realizes there's a proper balance with this, and there's a proper attitude. Because if you rely upon these two techniques and exonerate yourself and alleviate yourself of obligations, responsibilities, this is not what the Torah is speaking about. This is not what the rabbis are speaking about. Those two techniques are referring to someone who genuinely is stuck. They're stuck. So for example, let's say a person is going to work and he has a meeting, a business meeting, he has a certain time, 9 o'clock, and he doesn't want to be at this business meeting. And he's driving, you know, to his fortune, his car breaks down on the way. So breaks down, so now he's got an excuse, he doesn't have to go to the meeting. But he has alternatives. You know, he's got a cell phone. He can call an Uber. His friend is behind him. You can get a ride with him. Plenty of ways for him to get to the meeting on time if he really wanted to. He really saw the responsibility and the obligation to do it. There's a very fine line between true bona fide challenges, true bona fide obstacles which prevent the performance of a mitzvah, and because I'm just lazy. Because it's too uncomfortable, because I don't want to do it. I just know how to do it. It's a very, very fine line. And it's that self-reflection, which is so essential in this, because we have to understand, if I'm truly, you know, an oness, what's an oness is someone I just can't do it. I'm physically barred. I'm unable. I can't, you know, let's say a person lives, I mean, I just use that example, we're talking about Shabbos of it. Let's say a person lives 15 miles away from a shul. well, that doesn't mean say you can drive. That doesn't mean that you're stuck. So the only way you can go to the shul is, or go to daven, is you have to stay at home and daven. You've got no choice. That's a bona fide, you're stuck in that situation, or situations where you just can't do a particular thing. So you can't, you're constrained by the circumstances. So if you're truly constrained by the circumstances, then it, at that point, and you can't do the mitzvah, so now you can rely upon those two other methods of either connecting with someone who does, or by learning about it. But if I'm not constrained by the mitzvah, I'm not truly, truly not constrained, but I'm just, you know, I just don't want to do it because it's too inconvenient, it's too hard, it's too challenging for me. That's not called genuine constraint. And it's a very, very serious self-analysis. It's a very serious, and when we've had these conversations before, these are very, very personalized conversations, right? They're personalized conversations. Everyone's got their own personal challenges. But the message over here, we have to still hear the message. The message is not to underestimate the absolute power and significance of every single mitzvah being essential in the creation of self. And only when I genuinely can't do it, can I start relying upon these other techniques, these other mitzvah, these other methods. But the first thing to be thinking about is what could I be doing, which I'm just not pulling myself to do. What should I be doing to build myself? Because chas v'shalom, listen, I'm saying this out of sincerity. I care about everyone. I care about all of us that we all are healthy. We are healthy. We are healthy. That I, you know, saying a personal note, like, you know, here I am, you know, I'm in this, you know, Hashem's put me into this position of sharing these ideas. You know, it's, I feel responsible. I feel responsible to take care of everyone, to kind of give people the right direction, because I don't want, it terrifies me. It terrifies me the idea. You know, after Me'er Ve'Esrim, we go on, and I don't want to, you know, we build ourselves, we make ourselves, we create ourselves, and that's it. That's where we are. So my responsibility is to share these ideas, to encourage people to take seriously the mitzvahs, that they should really, you know, not neglect themselves. We shouldn't neglect, I speak to myself as well, we shouldn't neglect ourselves, we shouldn't neglect a particular part of our spiritual self. And because once the time is over, it's no longer a chance to fix it anymore. So that's what we learn from this parsha over here. We learn the idea, you know, the message of every single mitzvah, akef, every tiny little mitzvah is a piece in the puzzle, and of making that menorah out of our lives, that beacon of light, that torch of light out of our lives that should radiate within ourselves and outside of ourselves as well, forever and forever and forever and forever.